a little spice into your nightstand.
I'm gonna cut this shit out. I'll tell you that.
Why? Where are you gonna put it?
I don't. No, just like out. Different dads
have podcasting. White Line Fever, which is not about cocaine, which I thought it was about cocaine. It's not about cocaine. Different dads have podcasting. Why are you doing that? Don't do that. I hated that. Different dads have podcasting. Different dads have podcasting. Ooh, I enjoyed that romp in the park.
Yeah.
That was fun for the whole family.
Different dads have podcasting. Our apologies. The network has informed us that they do not approve of our unauthorized use of funds towards creating the nonprofit, quote, quote unquote, unquote. You're not yet ready for my topic, but you will be once I give you a bit of a disclaimer or a warning.
Uh-oh. Oh, right. This is the trigger, the content warning I've heard, I've grown to know and love.
One animal was harmed in the making of this story.
Oh, God. Okay.
Are you ready?
I don't like it. I already don't like it.
Shall we just get that out of the way?
Let's get that out of the way.
Okay. So okay. Today I'm going to tell you about Tycho Brahe, who is often known as Tycho Brahe, but was originally named Tycho Brahe. Three different names for one guy.
All very similar names, too. Yeah. Like, none of them are different enough to warrant having three names. It just sounds Tycho, like he just wants attention. What are you going to call him?
I'm most familiar with Tycho. So, with that out of the way, let's get into the part of the story you're going to love and hate the most.
God. Okay.
Tycho Brahe had many elk.
Oh, no.
One of them he tamed to such a point that it would follow him everywhere, including inside of the palace.
Oh!
And
wait, the palace? Who's this guy?
So he's Danish nobility.
Oh, okay.
1600.
You can't just drop casually that someone has a palace without giving me fucking context.
Okay, here, like, let, yeah, me start over. Let me start over.
He follows him everywhere, and he lives in a palace.
Shall I start over?
Dell.
Tycho Brahe, Danish nobility from the 1600s.
Great year for wine.
He had a tame pet elk that would follow him everywhere, including inside of his palace.
That's
when he was
cool.
Riding in a carriage, it would trot along next to the carriage.
No. This elk is gonna die. I'm already attached.
He would pet it. He was like very close friends with this elk. And
that's amazing.
He was also, he would get drunk with this elk. The elk would stand next to him at the table and eat.
God.
Off of a plate of food for people.
That is nothing makes me feel cooler than when animals follow me around. So that an animal that big, that is goals.
Right.
Well, okay. When I say animals, I don't mean humans. I hate when humans follow me. All other animals, I really like when they follow me. That so felt like an important specification.
Should we stop there or should
no,
I go?
No, tell me what he did to this poor elk that clearly devoted its life to him.
He had a friend who was throwing a party and wanted to impress people. So he lent his pet elk to a friend.
You would never. Why would you ever lend? You don't lend your friends. They're not property. Oh, God. And what'd they do? What'd they do to this elk?
People loved feeding the elk beer. And so they got this elk shit-faced drunk, and it ended up stumbling down a staircase to its demise when it was shit-faced drunk.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. I guess I'm glad he probably wasn't in any pain.
I feel like the elk lived a very blessed life.
That does sound like a really blessed life for an elk.
And then had, like, a tragic accident of an end to it.
Okay.
But,
all right. That wasn't as bad as I was expecting. I thought it was going to be more malicious.
But I
was expecting
like
the worst.
I feel like the debauchery of a drunk pet elk sort of sums up to some degree the spirit of
Christmas.
Tycho. Now let me give you like the short snippet. Tycho Brahe was Danish nobility from the 1600s who was more devoted to science and the woman he loved than he was to the crown, and so renounced all ties to his nobility in order to pursue a life with his commoner wife, as well as creating a research institution, the likes of which Europe had not known. As a matter
of fact. So it's basically like Charles and Meghan Markle, except instead of a research institute, they have a fucking podcast and a Netflix deal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Tycho Brahe, when he was young.
When he was a young warthog.
When he was a young warthog. Okay, so when Tycho Brahe was a young warthog, mm-hmm. he witnessed firsthand a partial solar eclipse. And
same.
What blew his mind about it is that astronomers had predicted it hundreds of years in advance, but they were off by one day. And so he was like, whoa, they were so close to right. And they predicted like basically an act of God. I want to do that. He dedicated himself to that pursuit to the point where he was sent to finishing school for nobles, where you're taught many, all of the languages of Europe and diplomacy and how to...
Which fork is for the salad?
Yeah, exactly. And he was fortunate to have a lenient instructor who would look the other way when he saw that Tycho wasn't brushing up on his classics. He wasn't reading Greek history. He was staring at star almanacs. He also, you know, he was a man of means. He had wealth. He hired translators to take Chinese manuscripts and translate them into German or Swedish or one of the many other languages he spoke. And he compiled the most accurate and, like, in terms of time, longitudinal studies of the night sky ever created.
Wow.
And what's really cool about that to me is a few things. One, he is the epitome of a scientist in that he sees the discipline as multicultural. Two, his scientific work ended up disproving his core beliefs. And I think that is really cool.
Yeah, well, that's like when I talked about the Hynek scale, but how he started out not believing in aliens at all. And then completely changed his tune when presented with more evidence, which is what scientists are supposed to do.
Yes.
Rather than just double down on their beliefs.
And he was looking for evidence that would disprove his core assumption, but clung to it with a tenacity that is, in hindsight, disappointing, if that's fair. So he... Yeah. Despite firmly believing that the Earth was the center and things revolved in perfect circles around the Earth, he was always looking for evidence to prove himself wrong and created enough evidence for Kepler to finally get Europe to buy Copernicus's model that the Ottoman Empire had already come to independently hundreds of years beforehand. So... what else should you know about Tycho? Tycho lost his nose in a duel with a cousin of his.
What the fuck? That's what you should have started with. What do you mean he lost his nose in a duel?
He lost, so his cousin... His cousin, also a Danish noble, ridiculed him for writing a Latin poem predicting the death of a sultan who had already died at the time that he wrote the poem.
What?
And so his cousin, in a manner that I feel is reasonable, gave him tireless shit for it. And they were drunk in a dimly lit bar and were arguing about who the better mathematician is.
Wow.
They decided to settle it in a duel.
This is some toxic masculinity, but like nerdy type.
They drew swords and Tycho lost his nose. And he chose, the fashion at the time was to use wax noses because they matched the skin very easily. Tycho chose brass. Most of the time, this guy had a brass nose on his face.
That sounds ridiculous looking.
On very special occasions, he had an alloy that was made of silver and gold of such a mixture that it matched his complexion. But he always
chose... Most of the time he was walking around with like a goddamn Swarovski custom nose.
Yes.
Like he had Cartier-ass nose.
A brass nose and a tame pet elk. God. And...
Oh my God.
Brace yourself. His own fucking island. Here's why. He wanted to leave to go to another country. He wanted to go to one of the top research institutions of Europe, none of which, as it so happened, were in Denmark. King Frederick of Denmark wanted him to remain in Denmark and further science there. And so he kept upping the ante, trying to sweeten the pot to get Tycho to stay, and eventually offered him his own fucking island. So long as he remained, and Tycho took that island and built, typically castles were made for war, but he built a castle with the intention of it being a research institution for art, music, and science.
So he built a university, basically. He built Oglethorpe, essentially.
He built what might amount to a university, but it also was its own little fiefdom. It had 70 farms that they all, like, worked and ate from.
This is so weird. So he built a co-op. Built a goddamn co-op.
He built a commune. Finally, Tycho met his end with a very sudden onset of ruptured bladder.
That's my nightmare.
There are three working theories behind it. The most likely theory is that he had this sickness, kept it secret from everyone else, and tried to treat himself using alchemy, which was the word for chemistry at the time, and may have ended up poisoning himself accidentally.
What condition?
Some sort of like stomach condition.
Okay. Damn.
Or all bladder condition. Okay.
Number two.
Less likely, but still possible. At the time, if you were having dinner with a noble, it was unthinkable to excuse yourself to use the bathroom. And he simply was too polite to not die.
Oh, wow. I would not survive among the nobles. I pee constantly.
I know, me too. The third supposition is that he had this sudden sickness come as an onset directly after visiting a rival astronomer. And so some, very few, but some believe that he was murdered by a fellow scientist
vengeance. Murder most foul.
Yeah.
I like the idea that astronomers would have fucking beef to the extent of possibly killing each other.
It was a very interesting time to be alive in that apparently. He lost his nose due to math.
Also, I like that you that you were like, oh, most people had wax noses. Why were most people losing their goddamn facial features?
No.
Pools and bars.
Most people who had lost a nose, very few people.
Why do you act like it's common to have lost a nose? I can't name anyone who's lost a nose.
Well,
other than Voldemort. Acting like there's this sort of epidemic of people's noses just fucking falling off.
It was rare at the time to lose a nose and survive because often it would be infected.
I understand that. Who was losing their nose other than this guy?
I mean,
I can't name a way that someone would lose their nose.
This is before firearms were accurate or widespread, right? So blades and honor ruled this era, and Europe was on some fuck shit, okay?
I just feel like first of all, Europe is still on some fuck shit. Not that we can talk. Second of all, I'm confused about the fact that people, because it's not like you can accidentally cut someone's nose off. Unless you're Cyrano de Bergerac, you can't just, no one can, what's that face about? You know the reference. You don't know the reference?
No.
Okay, well, it's a really old play book about a guy with a really, really big nose. They turned it into a movie starring Steve Martin called Roxanne. It's actually great. Point is, the guy got a schnoz, and that's the only way I could see someone getting their nose cut off in a duel. I feel like if I was in a duel and anyone was trifling, that's not the first thing that would get cut off.
What is the first thing?
An arm. Why would it be a nose? You have to have really good aim to cut someone's nose off, I feel like.
I feel like maybe his cousin was trying to murder him and just got his nose, and he was like, I'm satisfied. I am a better mathematician than you.
You know, because like, I know I could do the equation.
But in Danish.
I can't even make fun of a Danish accent because I don't know how I would.
Oh, but first, the obligatory crisis corner with Aunt Gilda.
Oh, I got a crisis corner for you. Get over here. I got a crisis for you, all right? I'm pretty much never not in crisis. I was sitting in traffic the other day, and this guy looked at me. What the audacity. I can't not tell you how I feel about when men look at me when I don't give them permission to. Do you think you can tell me when to talk? I decide when I want to talk. I talk when I want to talk. I don't talk when I want to talk, but most of the time I want to talk. I never really don't want to talk. I pretty much always just want to be talking, but some people don't like me to be talking, but I don't fucking care. Yeah, what would other people think? I talk when I want. We're in the bathroom. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to the guy in the stall next to me. Why am I in the men's bathroom, you ask? That's none of your goddamn business. That's all of my business. Genda is a goddamn construct. I pee where I want to. I pee outside the bathroom. I pee inside the bathroom. I had a lover who liked me to pee in his mouth. That was really gross. I don't talk to him anymore. I talk to him about once a week, but we don't try to make it a thing. It's not really a whole thing. I don't want it to be. I got a prolapsed anus.
Jesus Christ, Aunt Gilda. I did not need to know that.
It's not about what you need. It's about what I need. How come nobody ever asks me what I need? Have I ever told you about the time my anus prolapsed? Hold on. Let me rephrase. Have I ever told you about the second time my anus prolapsed? We're on time number 5 now. At this point, you just get it right back in there. You whistle. I sneeze a certain way and the thing pops out. It's loose. Everything is loose. Everything's falling down. My tits drag on the ground behind me. My labia drag on the ground behind me. My anus. This is just this whole other story. I don't know what's happening back there. I just kind of try to get some like zip ties and just keep everything nice and neat. Like, why don't the politicians just shut up and play sports?
What would that accomplish?
Certainly more than is being accomplished right now. Yeah, I mean, I'm ready.
Okay.
Mine's not funny this time. It's just something I didn't know existed.
Okay, go.
Okay, great. Have you heard of the Tetris effect?
No, what?
Okay, thank fucking Tesla, because I was so worried that you would have already heard of this, and I would have been devastated and burned my laptop. So the Tetris effect, also known as Tetris syndrome, is what occurs when you devote so much time and focus to an activity that it begins patterning your thoughts and even permeating your dreams, sometimes invasively so. So in the case of the actual Tetris game, where this phenomenon gets its name, people have claimed to play the game for such a prolonged period that they find themselves thinking about how the shapes in their life fit together, such as boxes on the supermarket shelf or buildings in a skyline. One man described it as a, quote, tendency to identify everything in the world as being made of four squares and attempt to determine where it fits in, end quote. So it's just, you play so much Tetris.
Do we unpack that metaphor, or do we just leave it where it is?
It seems unpacked. Yeah, I think it's interesting that you play so much of this game that you then look around and you're like, shapes are everywhere. Everything's shapes. But sea legs are sea legs, like when you get when you've been on a boat and then you walk on land and you have that strange sensation. Mm-hmm. That and other types of illusions of self-motion, which are just sensations of bodily movement where there is none. Those are also technically kinds of the Tetris effect. Of like, you've had so much of one experience sensorily in one some way that it then carries into even when you're not doing that thing anymore.
So like, if I were to run on a treadmill and then start walking and I get that weird feeling, that right. is one subsection of the Tetris effect.
Yes, that's a kind of Tetris effect. Specifically, that is an illusion of self-motion. So like when you rollerblade or ice skate and you get off the, and you feel like you're still bobbling around. Yeah, that's that. Which I didn't know that that had a name other than just sea legs. And these people that they studied even report moving colors while at the threshold of consciousness as they fall asleep, which is a type of hypnagogic imagery, which is reflecting this or other repetitive activities. So like climbing, swimming, playing chess, performing work-related tasks, things that you did while you're awake, you'll sometimes get these flashes of imagery as you're falling asleep. And fun fact, I didn't know that that's what hypnagogic imagery was, that it's like imagery as you fall asleep. The opposite of hypnagogic imagery is hypnopompic imagery. So, which, right, that's not even the topic. I just think it's fascinating.
What does that mean?
So hypnagogic is the time when you're transitioning from being awake to being asleep. And hypnopompic is when you're transitioning from being asleep to being awake. Why did they need two different names? No one knows. But look, the beauty of language. So anyway, we digress. Cognitively, Tetris effect imagery is proposed as a separate form of memory, which I think is interesting, that it's a different type of memory where it's they think it's related to procedural memory, which is like implicit, unconscious, long-term memory. And researchers arrived at this hypothesis by studying people with anterograde amnesia, so people who are unable to form new explicit conscious memories. So these folks reported of dreaming of falling shapes after playing Tetris all day, even though they had no memory of actually playing the game itself.
Whoa.
Right? So the Tetris effect exists in a different part of your memory than your conscious memory.
That's cool.
Isn't that insane that you're that, like, you can play this game all day and have no memory of playing the game, but your brain will still retain
different storage spots your body has for lessons, trauma. Right.
Yeah.
Name it.
Yeah. All sorts of little corners. I'm like, oh, what's this? A fear of men for me? The concept of the Tetris effect was broadened by Angelica B. Ortiz de Gortari,
who coined the term.
They coined the term game transfer phenomena, which is a wider concept of the Tetris effect, including not just visual and mental processes and perceptions, but also auditory and tactile sensations and sensations of unreality. So game transfer phenomena is not only what we're talking about of like you hear things from earlier memories, or you feel like phantom things from like tactile memories. Mm-hmm. But it's also sensations of unreality. Like one of the examples that they gave was, you know, seeing a life bar over someone's head kind of thing. Like a break from reality, essentially.
Whoa.
Which we could, you know, it's a whole other podcast if we could get into what is reality and how do we define it. But anyway, the earliest description of the Tetris effect itself first appeared in a Neil Gaiman sci-fi poem called Virus, and eventually even became what?
This started with Neil Gaiman?
The description of the effect, yes.
Holy shit.
He didn't create it, but he...
Right.
Right. And then it got so popularized as a concept and people started understanding what it was and studying it, that Tetris was like, fuck it, we're owning this, and then named their new game the Tetris Effect. All of this is, so this is all, that's all the Tetris Effect. The end. Ladies and gentlemen, this week we have the artistic stylings of a sad French tree mourning the loss of innocence.
La fille's suffering. The tree that once grew next to me, she is no more. Ah, yes, Belinda. I remember her well. She was a willow, weeping just like my heart. Oh, mon coeur. She was a wonderful tree.
Oh, God, that's right. I forgot that this was happening. Oh,
I'm God. Gilbert okay, Godfrey. I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy, it hurts. I'm a model, and you know what I mean. And I can shake my little tush out on the catwalk. I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy, it hurts.